The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Donald Trump's suggestion that the Gaza Strip be cleared of all Palestinians, that they be forcibly removed to Israel and Jordan, and that the US take ownership of the Strip and developed what he described as a Middle East Riviera. With me to discuss is Dr. Jilan Waba Abdel Majid. She is the Palestinian ambassador to Ireland. Ambassador, you're welcome to the show. What was your reaction when you heard Donald Trump's comments?
I'm lucky that I'm from Gaza. I was born there and I live there. And the president of the United States think of my country or my town, my city, my place as Riviera. It is actually, and even more. But that doesn't give anyone on this earth the right to talk about or on behalf of the Palestinians. This land belongs to the Palestinians, and the Palestinian people has only the right to speak about our homeland. This is our land, and no one will give up our rights to our homeland.
I mean, Donald Trump is a great man to kind of say the preposterous, the outlandish, the bombastic, get the headlines, and then not follow through with it or go for something else. And we see that with tariffs, we see that with talk of invading Greenland and what have you. Nevertheless, he's a powerful man and he needs to be taken seriously. How worried are you that this is now something that is being talked about?
Yeah, I mean, yes, as you said, he's the president of the United States and we should take his words seriously. And that's why we reject all the calls that he talked about or he expressed last night. I think the voice that comes from Palestine and the message that comes from all the Palestinians in the world to reject this plan and to be one voice against it. And I wanted just to emphasize on one thing. If the world understand or he understand the scene that for the Palestinians who came from the southern part of Gaza, more than 300,000 Palestinians came return to their homes, return back to the north part of Gaza, even though that they know that they have no homes anymore after Israel destroyed it. This scene, if anybody on this earth understands, he realized that the Palestinians will never give up their rights and they will never be easily to uproot it from their homeland. I think this was a strong message. It shouldn't be gone away like that. This is the message of the Palestinian, and every Palestinian still believes that this is our right and this is our just right.
Do you worry that by even speaking in these terms that he's undermining the fragile ceasefire that currently exists?
The ceasefire is we hope that this will continue. I mean, the Israelis wanted their hostages back and we wanted our prisoners back. We wanted the people. It's enough for the 15 months of killing and bombarding. And it's a genocidal war. I mean, people have had enough from this brutality. We need this one. And we wanted the international community to help us to have a sustained ceasefire. I know that the Arab states are working hard with the Palestinians towards maintain this ceasefire. It depends on the Israelis. It depends on the Americans who support the Israeli side. But as well, I don't see that we're less stronger than the other side of Israelis and Americans. We have a strong voice that comes from Palestine and the Arab states to say that we need to maintain the ceasefire, and we wanted the rights of the Palestinians to be recognized. I mean, no peace in the region without recognizing the rights of the Palestinians. I think after 15 months and after 7 decades, this is the story of recognizing the rights of the Palestinians. No stability in the region without recognizing the rights of the Palestinians.
Dr. Jilan Waba Abdel Majid, the Palestinian ambassador to Ireland. Ambassador, thank you very much for speaking to us here on the show. Alistair Bunkle with me now. Alistair is Sky's Middle East correspondent based in Jerusalem. Alistair, what has the reaction been to these comments in Jerusalem, in Israel and across the Middle East?
Well, the reaction across the Middle East has been one of people gobsmacked. In Israel, there is quite a lot of support for what Trump had to say, actually not just amongst the sort of the usual players, the far right, who have long wanted to reoccupy and resettle Gaza. For them, this is a vindication of a belief they've held for most of their lifetime. And Ben Gvir, for example, the former national security minister, tweeting today, basically saying, look, I told you so. I've been saying this for a long time. I used to be mocked. Now the US president is saying it. Bezalel Smotrich, when Trump first kind of mooted the idea a few days ago of Palestinians going to Jordan and Egypt, said, right, my team are going to start working on concrete proposals for this. So they are cock-a-hoop, to be honest, but also a lot of Israelis think that this is a solution to bring them peace and stability once and for all. But Jerusalem is a divided city. Half of it is Israeli. On the other side, you have Palestinians as well. And they are shocked. They are angry. And like their kindred in Gaza, they are defiant. They do not want anyone to leave the land that they strongly believe is theirs.
How prevailing a view then is it, kind of across that political spectrum within Israeli society, that the two-state solution is no longer a solution?
I don't really think the two-state solution has been a realistic option for a long time. Diplomats, Western diplomats who work here, still cling on to the idea, perhaps in absence of anything better that has come along. But certainly with Benjamin Netanyahu as Israel's prime minister, he's never believed in a two-state solution. For most of his time, most of his political career, he's been actively against it, particularly now that he leads a coalition with so many right-wingers in it who would resign and collapse the government if we got anywhere close to that. So, I think a lot of Palestinians have also given up on the idea as well. They have seen diplomatic efforts come and go. They've seen their hopes rise and fall many times over the years. And if you, speak to Palestinians in the West Bank, I spend a lot of time in the West Bank, close to where I live. I think they, frankly, are a bit fed up of hearing that is the solution to all their problems.
So what do they see as the solution? Those who would have maybe subscribed to a kind of the two-state vision at some stage in the past, but think for whatever reason it's unworkable now, and it's never going to come to pass. How do they imagine the future?
It's not that they don't necessarily like the idea of a two-state solution. It's not that they don't want their own independent state. They do. It's just that I think they are fed up of hearing Western governments continually repeating it, but making no progress towards it, whilst the reality on the ground is that we've seen settlement expansion with illegal under international law increase dramatically over recent years, certainly at the moment as well. They've seen the Israeli military using force in Palestinian villages and towns, which is very much on the increase. Settler attacks against Palestinians on the increase as well. And so I think they see a complete disconnect between statements that come out of Western capitals and what's actually happening on the ground. And it's not that they don't support a two-state solution. It's not that they don't want to have their own independent state. They just are fed up, really, of hearing words and no action towards it.
Listen, Alistair, stay with us because Shashank Joshi is on the line as well, defence editor with The Economist. Shashank, thank you as well for taking the time to speak to us, and it's good to talk to you again. We always find ourselves, after Donald Trump says something kind of outrageous that grabs the headlines, whether kind of it's something he means kind of prima facie, whether it's kind of a negotiating ploy, is this the art of the deal? Is he just kind of making noise for the sake of getting headlines? What's your assessment of the position he enunciated yesterday?
Well, I think if it's a serious plan, then we have to be serious about what it would involve. And what strikes me as interesting is that Trump has just spent the last week and a half appointing his Pentagon and some other parts of his administration, like the National Security Council, with a lot of people who in American the American foreign policy ecosystem are known as either restrainers who want America to do less in the world, or prioritizers, those who say America's got to do less in Europe and the Middle East because it needs more resources to devote to confronting the challenge posed by China in the Indo-Pacific region, in the Pacific. And those people, I think, will be looking at this proposal and just in despair because, frankly, an exercise to take over a territory of 2 million, orders to conduct ethnic cleansing, which, of course, would be against international law and would be very problematic for the U.S. military, to say the least, and then to govern this strip in the face of what could be IED attacks, suicide bombings, just after you've come out of 20 years of war in the Middle East, I think these people will think, what have we got ourselves into? So for all those reasons, I'd just be very, very surprised if, in 2 years, 3 years, there really is anything remotely resembling the vision that Trump has proposed.
Is there a kind of a foreign policy doctrine emerging then, or is it still somewhat schizophrenic?
Well, the doctrine, I think, is threat. Make a lot of threats very loudly, very wildly, very loosely. And if you act crazy enough, and if you act impulsively enough, people will be frightened into giving you things. I think that's the best way we could describe it. You can argue, in one sense, that succeeded with the threat of tariffs against Canada and Mexico. You can also argue that actually Trump has got very little in return for those things. We'll see what he ends up getting on other core interests. For example, will he receive something of note on Greenland, which he wants to buy from Denmark? Will he receive something from Panama, where Marco Rubio, the foreign secretary, is visiting in the coming days? Similarly, in Gaza, if he doesn't get to sort of occupy Gaza, which again, I reiterate, I think is quite unlikely, could we imagine American privileges in the reconstruction of part of Gaza, including remembering here that, this could be an element of corruption involved, money flowing into Trump-linked businesses as an interest of his. That's entirely possible. So he will get sort of something in return for this flailing around. But again, it will be very unlikely to resemble the first thing he wants, whether that is annexing Canada or whether that is occupying Gaza.
So what does it mean, though? I mean, even to kind of suggest this out loud and to expose himself to the wrath of even his own allies, I mean, what might it mean for peace within that particular region?
Depends what we mean by peace, I suppose, because the first thing that comes to mind is that for a long time, the people around Trump were very minded about extending the process of what we call normalization, which started with a country like the United Arab Emirates reaching a peace deal in the Abraham Accords with Israel. The big prize was always Saudi Arabia, of course, a large kingdom in the Middle East, very conservative Islamic country, custodian of the holiest sites in Islam. And if you could get Saudi Arabia to make peace with Israel, well, that would be the biggest breakthrough in the region since the Camp David Accords of 1979 and the signing of agreements with Egypt and Jordan. If you are proposing ethnically cleansing Palestinians and creating an American imperial outpost in Gaza, I can say pretty safely that's not going to go down terribly well with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia or any of those other countries. And you are effectively torpedoing any hopes of normalization. So if that's one definition of what you call regional peace, then certainly it's very counterproductive, to say the least.
Well, let's imagine then for a moment, if we kind of war game this out, that this isn't kind of his the thing that he ultimately wants. You can kind of make sense of things with regard to Ukraine and access to, rare earth minerals that they might have in that country. You look at Greenland as well and kind of the defense consequences of the kind of the Arctic ice sheet being kind of almost permanently melted within the next 10 years and even kind of Canada as well to a similar degree. What's the end goal? What's this the opening negotiating gambit in, if I can put it that way?
Well, it depends if you mean globally or in Gaza, but globally it is, I think, to project American strength, okay, to show that America is dominant again, that it doesn't care about the rules, it cares about raw power and strength. And that's where the invocation of President McKinley, a president under whom America expanded its territory in the 19th century, is so important to Trump. That's what he said in his inauguration. The specifics are less important than that message that America is strong, America is powerful, and America will use that power in its own interest, regardless of the rules. In Gaza, I think it's also a message that says, we're going to think outside the box. The danger, of course, is with all of this, that if you think so far outside the box that you rip up all those rules and say that ethnic cleansing is fine, forcible annexation and occupation of territory is fine, well, that unfortunately is music to the ears of Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping. And of course, you know, they don't need America's permission to do bad things. They do lots of those anyway. But if you are thinking about, from a Russian perspective, seizing and occupying Moldova, say, or in the Chinese case, Taiwan, I think you'll get the feeling that in this American administration, you may find a president who is not only not hostile to those things, he may actually respect them.
Listen, before I let you go, Alistair Bunkle is still on the line. Alistair, just in terms of the ceasefire agreement that is currently in place, this was kind of the first phase of what was hoped to be kind of a three-phase agreement. What's the sense there in Israel today as to, you know, whether that is kind of more or less viable now in the wake of these comments?
Well, the negotiations to nail down the detail of the second phase began kind of in Washington on Monday when Netanyahu met with Steve Witkoff, who is Trump's Middle East envoy. And Netanyahu has sent a very low-level team to Qatar as well. It's questionable how much actually authority they have. But the negotiations basically now have started. On the one hand, for Netanyahu, what Trump had to say last night will please the right wing in his government, who are threatening to collapse the government if the ceasefire went into a second phase. And I think probably listening to what Trump had to say last night, they won't do that just now. But how's Hamas going to react to it? What are they going to sort of continue to negotiate in the same way that they were a few weeks back? Or now they have a threat of not just themselves being expelled possibly from Gaza, but the entire Gazan population. Are they still going to pursue the ceasefire negotiations in the same vein? And if they don't and the ceasefire negotiations collapse, then you know exactly what will happen. Netanyahu and Trump will point the finger at Hamas and say it was their fault if the war again starts in Gaza. So, you know, whatever was behind Trump's thinking, whether or not he's just, you know, going by his old playbook of, you know, throwing something so outlandish out there in order that it starts a conversation, starts a negotiation process, whatever's behind it, it was a very, very dangerous thing to say.
Alistair Bunkle, Sky's Middle East correspondent based in Jerusalem, Shashank Joshi, the defence editor with The Economist. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.